We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Welcome to Keeping the Faith. Our guests today are three different folks. One in the far-off state of Utah by phone, Dean Craig Jessup. Welcome, Craig.
Thank you.
And we're happy to have a good connection with you today. We also have Julie Beiler, who is in the studio, who is the director of the Chorale, and Chris Holman, who is a freshman at the University of Illinois studying organ performance. Welcome, Chris. Good to have you here. And, Chris, you received a scholarship from the Chorale to continue your music education, and you've chosen to come to the University of Illinois, which is a wise choice, in spite of what Dean Jessup might say about the wonders of Utah State. Let me talk with you for just a minute first. When did you first start studying music?
I started when I was, eight or so. And it just sort of snowballed, I guess.
It caught your imagination. So yeah. You started with keyboards or something else?
Yeah, with keyboard.
Okay. And so piano first and then later organ?
Yes.
Or what?
I started organ when I was, I think it was 12 or so. No, it was a little bit later than that. But anyway, I had this little church job at a country church. And I started out as the piano player. And they had an organ, and so I said, well, as a church, I should probably kind of learn how to do this, and everything just sort of went from there.
Now, at the University of Illinois, who are you studying with?
Dana Robinson is the organ professor, who's extremely, extremely fabulous, really
very accomplished,
fantastic.
A wonderful performer,
yes.
As well as a teacher with a fine reputation.
Yes,
right.
Very.
And Organ programs have had some difficulty around the world these days with all of the new instruments that are out and many churches and synagogues and places that want to hire organists often have difficulty because there aren't as many around as there used to be.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, Dean Jessup, do you find that in your experience in Utah? I know, of course, with the Latter-day Saints, music has always been very important. Do you have difficulty finding good performers for worship?
Yes and no. With the Latter-day Saints, it's all a lay clergy, so no one is paid for anything within the local congregation, so it's very much trick-or-treat.
And that includes musicians.
That includes musicians, so there's no paid organists. The only paid organists in the entire Latter-day Saint faith are in the Salt Lake Tabernacle, where there are three full-time organists and two associate organists. It's the communities, all the congregations depend on who is in their congregation. For example, in my congregation, it's my wife, and they're fortunate. She's a very fine organist, but we've been in places where, at least I've lived prior to my marriage, in places where I was the organist, and that was pretty grim.
We're going to be talking today about a musical performance that's here in Champaign-Urbana, where Dean Jessup will be the conducting part of it, and the other conductor is the founding director of the Chorale here in the Champaign-Urbana, Illinois area, Julie Beiler, who's in the studio as well. Julie, why does the Chorale give these scholarships to people like Chris? Tell us a little bit about that history.
Well, our history, as you know, is 28 years old. We're approaching this 28th, we're in this 28th season, I guess I should say. And when I first took the job under duress, I think you could say, because I knew how much work it would be. My focus was pretty short-sighted, and it was if we're going to survive the next year kind of thing. And after about 8 years, it became apparent that perhaps it might work. And so we began to do things to make ourselves an organization. And one of those things was making a little bit of money, which we did by appearing at the local soon-to-be extinct, I guess, Virginia Theater. So we determined that this might be a venue, a downtown Champaign, that people would enjoy.
That was the thought at the time, that the theater might not survive even another couple years.
Indeed. Karasotis, right. George Karasotis owned it, and we thought he might even tear it down. And now, as you know, under restoration, it has become a national on the National Register of Historic Places. At any rate, our first performance there was a sold-out performance. We decided that perhaps people were interested, and we did a New Year's Eve event. That New Year's Eve, because, frankly, the University of Illinois was closed down during that time, and nothing much was going on, and so we thought we perhaps could attract an audience, which we did, and began to make money. And that was a strange occurrence for us, but we figured we had to do something with that money, and after a very short consideration period, we came up with the idea of supporting young musicians as they became high school seniors and put together a program of auditions and interviews, and with a local high school teacher at the time, Willie Somerville, was very instrumental in helping us begin that program and gave away $1,000 scholarships. Of course, in the beginning, it was scraping together $1,000 to give away, and over the course of time, we have had several in the community who have joined us in that event and that effort, and we have been able to, at times such as the year this past year when Chris was one of the winners, there were $3,000 winners and a couple runners-up. So that then quickly became a part of our mission.
And Julie, continue on, if you would, and tell our listeners how they may hear Chris play, and you and Craig are conducting this festival choir of what? How many voices?
Well, it's kind of in flux because people have been joining every day, more or less. But we're looking at about 110, perhaps, singers.
Where will the concert be?
The concert will be at McKinley Presbyterian Church for the first time. We don't have a permanent home. One of the joys of being a volunteer amateur organization, not associated with any university or church or anything like that. But I chose McKinley this year because, as you know, it being a former place of business of yours, Steve, the acoustics there are friendly, I guess you would say. I think there's not a stitch of fabric that I know of in the sanctuary. And so knowing that there is plenty of parking, and I want to reassure folks of that, parking deck right across the street, good instruments, good space.
And that will be next Sunday on the 7th of November.
11/7/7, yes, November.
At 7 p.m.
Exactly right.
And let me say a word about the parking, since some people think in this region, oh, you can't come to the University of Illinois when all the students are there and find a place to park. But you can on Sunday night because there are two very large free university parking decks available, one on the corner of 5th and Daniel, and one on John Street, just about half a block from the church at 5th. So 6th and John is a place to park, and also 5th and Daniel, as well as on the street. So the parking is free on Sundays still. So even if there's a meter, people can park free.
As is the concert.
The concert is free. That's right, mm-hmm. as well. We're talking today particularly about the themes of the music that deal with war and peace. Now, in terms of keeping the faith, we deal with issues of spirituality, religion, and so forth. And, of course, in the history of religion, music celebrating war has been an important part. Going back to the Hebrew Scriptures, perhaps the oldest poem in the Bible is that Miriam's song celebrating the horse and the rider being tossed into the sea with the escape of the Israelites from slavery in Egypt. And so here is this poem that almost certainly was set to music. We know that from other places in the Hebrew Bible that Miriam was considered not only a prophet but also a musician. And, of course, the Psalms that come from the Hebrew Bible that are held in honor by Jews and Christians and Muslims alike often celebrate victories in war, whether it's the escape from slavery or the victory in battle. But there's also, in the Psalms as well, of course, music, hymnody that celebrates peace. And we're talking today about both of those, how music deals with all sorts of emotions, but also with sort of political reality, things like war and peace. Let's start with Chris. An easy question. You're mm-hmm. a singer, I heard, as well as an organist, and I believe you sang the Star Spangled Banner at a basketball.
Oh. yeah.
Uh-huh. Tell us about that.
It was the state championship for, I think it was 1A or 2A basketball. I'm not really sure. But it was in Peoria. It was in the Civic Center, and I sang the national anthem.
So you were selected to sing that. You were then a high school senior at St. Thomas
yes.
More?
Yes, correct.
Okay. So here's this Francis Scott Key poem set to music that's become our national anthem, celebrating his feelings when he was seeing the Stars and Stripes, symbol, the flag of America being raised over the fort. How did you feel? What were your emotions as you sang that song in that typical American situation, a basketball game?
Well, I did it twice because there were two games. The first time I was terrified. The second time it wasn't. You know, I could sort of enjoy it. You know, it was really inspiring because, you know, basketball is such a big part of the American experience, and to you know, to sing at such a big basketball game was really exciting.
Sure. Were you conscious at all of the history of that song and where at least the poem began?
Not so much. I sort of got thrown into it at the last minute, actually.
As musicians often are called
yeah.
to do. Dean Jessup, when you first were learning music, did you start off singing patriotic songs like Chris?
No, I sang. I'm from a family of cowboys. My first music teachers were Hank Williams and Patsy Cline. And my first music lessons were guitar lessons, so I remember singing country western tunes as a boy.
Well, we'll just have to do one verse of Crazy.
But she's a classic.
Didn't you also tell me, Craig, about a certain rodeo experience in the national anthem?
Well, I'm reflecting on the national anthems and my career. Of course, I have 20 years in the United States Air Force as director of the Air Force Singing Sergeants and the Air Force Bands. In here and in Europe. So I have many, many memories of significant performances of the Star Spangled Banner, but probably the proudest moment in my father's life was when I sang the national anthem on horseback at the Cache County Rodeo. Nothing else I have ever done exceeded that moment for my dad, and I was proud to do it just for him.
Not even being director of the Mormon Tabernacle Choir?
No, I don't think so. I have to say, I can think of so many events, but one of the most compelling performances of the Star Spangled Banner was the opening ceremony of the 2001 Winter Olympic Games. It just was an amazing moment because they had brought the flag that had flown on top of the World Trade Center, and it was just tattered, and it was solemnly brought out onto the ice sheet, and behind it was the Utah Symphony Orchestra and the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. It was brought out onto the ice sheet with an honor guard of members of the military and members of the U.S. Olympic team, and you could have heard a pin drop with a stadium filled with tens of thousands of people, and it was really quite a remarkable solemn moment, and the arrangement was Robert Russell Bennett that he had done for Robert Shaw, that started very subdued and very quiet, not bombastic at all, and then it grew and grew and grew. It was quite a memory for me.
And Julie, you are a singer yourself, a soloist, as well as a conductor and founder of the Chorale here in Champaign-Urbana area. Do you have memories of singing these kind of patriotic songs?
I think most of my patriotic experiences have been within choral organizations. And while we're talking about patriotism and Olympics, I must say I enjoy hearing the Star-Spangled Banner and take the same thrill that everyone else does when one of our athletes stands on top of the podium. But, you know, I have enjoyed and felt equally as inspired by other countries who have heard their own national anthem played. And that's something I want to talk about a little bit with this concert. It's not really a patriotic concert in the red, white, and blue sense. My vision was to celebrate all of those in every country who serve in any way, in the armed forces, in a military fashion, in a civilian fashion, toward the interest of peace. And so people who come to this concert should know that it's going to be inclusive. That's my hope, at any rate, and speak about peace as others join us here. And we tend to think in the United States that we're the powerful country. We have the money, the weapons, the tools, and all of that to assure that. But there are others in other lands, as the Sibelius tune "This Is My Song," for instance, talks about, other lands as with skies as blue as ours and so forth. So that's the vision for this concert.
Tell us about some of the music that people will be hearing who come on November 7th at 7 o'clock to McKinley Presbyterian Church on the corner of 5th and John Street in Champaign.
Very good. Well, we're going to start out with, indeed, that Sibelius piece, "This Is My Song." And then we're going to sing a Hebrew song, Bashana Haba'a, which speaks about the hopefulness of the new year. Everything in the new year is always going to be better. We're also going to sing a piece called "Inscription of Hope," which contains the words that were found on the walls of Cologne, Germany, inscribed by those Jews who were awaiting that terrible fate during the Holocaust. Even that is hopeful. I believe in God even when he is not there. I believe in a trial even though there's always a way. I believe in the sun even when it's not shining. So it's a very hopeful, uplifting thing. And then Craig is going to conduct, indeed, a very red, white, and blue number, ironically written by John Rutter, called Canticles of America.
An English composer.
Correct. We're singing four movements of the five, and it's very identifiable with us here in the Midwest, speaking of the process that we've just recently gone through, the sowing, the planting, the harvesting, and the pride that we have in our country. We're also singing a wonderful number that Craig suggested called "Who Are the Brave?" Because we tend to think again of bravery in the light of those who put their lives on the line. And the
in terms of the military.
Correct. And the text is so meaningful that I've had it printed in the program so that, not that you can't understand the words, because Dr. Jessup will be sure about the diction, but that it's just so illustrative of what it is to be brave. And I'm going to just leave it at that so that you can read the words and enjoy. And there will be some music that people will ascribe to patriotism, Battle Hymn of the Republic. How could we possibly have Dr. Jessup here without singing Battle Hymn of the Republic, although this will be his third visit here, and I think this is our first rendition of that number. So, and another one that I think probably most typically exemplifies a song of peace might be the prayer that is attributed to St. Francis of Assisi, although we aren't sure that it's actually his, and that is, "Lord, make me an instrument of thy peace," also by John Rutter.
We'll be playing a cut from that, probably one of the last things we do in the program today, but because we know we'll be missing Dean Jessup the last 10 or so minutes because of prior commitments. And I might just mention for listeners that ordinarily this is a live call-in program here on AM 580 WILL. But this week, because of scheduling issues, we have needed to pre-record this, so that we will not be taking calls or during the show. I'll try to ask all the tough questions and do the best I can, but we will not be letting listeners participate during this show. And I might mention that next week on Keeping the Faith, it'll be the same thing. We're doing a pre-recorded a program, which is with Dr. Glenn Miller, about how patients can lower health care costs, how patients can lower health care costs, a new book of Glenn Miller. So that will be November 7, the same evening of the later concert at McKinley Presbyterian Church of the Corral. Dean Jessup, the Battle Hymn of the Republic was mentioned. What a stirring piece that is. How do you prepare a choir to sing that?
Well, the preparation is the same for that as it would be any other piece. The basic craftsmanship of fine choral singing, pitch, rhythm, diction, phrasing. So once you get those elements into place, I tell the choirs it's 90% craft and 10% art. But art doesn't exist without the craft, and the craft is basically the same no matter what you approach. Once you get those building blocks in place, then really bringing in the fire of the motivation behind it, the meaning of it, the reasons for doing it, then that becomes a great psychological factor, both for the performers and for the listeners. Battle Hymn of the Republic has become, in my experience, a universally beloved hymn. It's not just in America. Having toured around the world, I've found audiences all around the world respond to that in a similar fashion to Americans. Associated primarily with the Civil War, with the great struggle of freedom for all men and women, Abraham Lincoln's shadow looms very heavily over it as well. It seems to resonate with people as a song of triumph over adversity, of right and over wrong. It's a very powerful piece, and the particular edition we're doing, arranged by Peter Wilhowski, is the one recorded by the Mormon Tabernacle Choir in 1959 with Eugene Ormandy and the Philadelphia Orchestra. It received a Grammy Award, and if you don't do it on a Tabernacle Choir concert, you get booed off the stage. It's just unthinkable not to include that. It's usually included as an encore on the program.
And do I remember correctly, your 9 years as director of the Mormon Tabernacle Choir?
Yeah, 4 years as the associate and 9 years as the music director.
As the music director.
Uh-huh.
How many times, roughly, would you have performed that?
Oh, my gosh. I would say that it numbers in the hundreds. And I have to be honest, I never tire of it. I never grow bored or tired with it. Because of the response, my first memories are singing that in junior high school, that very same arrangement, and it affects me the same way as it did then. It's a very powerful piece.
Because of the power of music to affect people emotionally, it's often used, and this is getting to a tough question, but it's often used by tyrants. It's used by dictators. It's used by people who want to get that marching rhythm going to pull people into being willing to sacrifice their own lives or their sons and daughters' lives for perhaps military expansion, taking over other countries. Talk a little bit about how, as a musician, you feel about that use of music.
Well, music is a powerful tool. There's no question. I mean, the Greeks understood this millennia ago. The Chinese knew the power of music and how it could sway human emotions. The Greeks identified certain modes that would, if you listen to these modes, it would bring out certain character qualities and certain modes that were to be also shunned because of their power. And it's no different today. Music has a powerful force. We saw what the Nazis and what Hitler did with the power of music in motivating an entire nation. Verdi in Italy is one of the great heroes of all time of that country because of his music that he wrote. The chorus from Nabucco of the Hebrew slaves became, I think, if not the Italian national anthem, it's second to the national anthem for being loved. So music can be, as in any art form, used for good or evil purposes.
And, of course, we have the history of the reaction to Wagner, even today, with people who remember how it was misused by Hitler's Germany.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm sorry, Julie, go ahead.
Well, even the spirituals, the African-American spirituals, are just a classic example of music that is used in a number of ways to celebrate, to express joy and sorrow. And I'm thinking of Go Down Moses when you think of igniting to action, to the spiritual that talks about way down in Egypt land to let my people go. So it is true that it's used in a number of ways.
The nice thing, the amazing thing to me about the spiritual is that it was much more than music. It was a coded language among the slaves.
Absolutely.
You know, let my people go is simply a rebellion, rightly so, against slavery. Follow the drinking gourd. Follow the North Star. You'll get to freedom. Freedom. Wade in the water, children. Wade in the water. Cross the Ohio River from Kentucky to Ohio, and you're into the free North. So music, yeah, it's a pretty melody and a great beat. But more importantly, it was a coded language of communication among the slaves.
We're talking today on Keeping the Faith with Dean Craig Jessup. Let's see, Craig, we had a program with you back in the summer here on Keeping the Faith and learned about your history. But just for listeners who might have missed that, or of course, some can go back and listen on the archives at will.illinois.edu/keepingthefaith and find that program. But for present listeners, where did you get your doctorate again? Was that Notre Dame?
No, Stanford University.
Stanford. Oh, just Stanford. Okay. And before that, your education.
I have a bachelor's of music in music education with a choral emphasis from Utah State University,
where you are now.
Yes. And then a master's of arts in music education, choral emphasis from Brigham Young University, and a doctorate of musical arts in conducting from Stanford.
Okay. And, Chris, you're just starting your higher education in music. You've made a wise choice, as we said earlier, at the University of Illinois to study organ performance. What else do you know you're going to study during your 4 years here in terms of music?
Certainly choral conducting is a big part of what I do. I'm taking classes now in it, actually.
From whom?
From Chester Aulis.
Yes, a wonderful, wonderful director.
Mm-hmm. And study a little bit of harpsichord as well.
Okay. Who teaches harpsichord at the University of Illinois?
That is Charlotte Maddox.
Ah, good. University towns are very fortunate in having a plethora of wonderful musicians and opportunities to hear music. I was in Chicago last night and listening to WFMT as I drove down since I was out of range of WILL-FM. And hearing in Chicago, you know, just the list of the art news and music news and what's available, you know, almost every day. So, Julie, why should people in Champaign-Urbana who can hear all this music, why should they come to hear a volunteer choir sing?
Oh, gosh, good question. We wondered that, have wondered that for 28 years, to be truthful. Well, when we began, there was no such opportunity here other than local church choirs. University, of course, you could join their oratorio society, but it was intimidating to a lot of people. One of the things that we offer, I guess you might say, is a no audition process. That doesn't mean, however, that we are lax in our attempt to elicit from all of the singers everything that a professional choir might aspire to. So I think it's a community pride kind of thing, that people know these people and they can, the singers can expose perhaps non-singing relatives to come and listen and begin to appreciate choral music. Choral music has always kind of played a second role to instrumental music. People will go to band concerts and orchestras before they will go to choruses and to hear them. So that's one reason I think that it's important to support an organization that offers opportunities for a wider variety of folks who might be interested in such a thing.
Let me say again, there will be this free concert that we've been talking about on this program on Sunday night, the 7th of November at 7 p.m., and it's at McKinley Presbyterian Church on the corner of 5th and John Street in Champaign. And there is plenty of free parking on the street on Sunday nights, as well as in two university parking garages, parking decks, five stories of parking just within half a block of the church, available free on Sunday evenings.
I might say, too, if I could, Steve, that this will be Dr. Jessup's third time here, that one of the things we began to realize when we thought we might be a credible organization that could survive was that we had to provide some really outstanding opportunities to inspire singers and audiences. And so we began to have this idea for choral festivals. We've, as you may know, have hosted Alice Parker. Just last fall, we had Renee Clausen here.
Noted conductors, both of whom have also been on this program.
Yes, indeed. Jean Redpath, my good Scottish folk singing friend, has kind of adopted our organization. But there's a good reason that Craig is coming back for the third time.
Well, let's let him speak to that. Craig, question. That was a question I had. I mean, here you are now.
From my perspective.
Here you are now, you know, dean of this college and dealing with not just music but all the arts there at Utah State in Logan. Why do you take time out of your tremendously busy schedule to go and spend a weekend with volunteer singers when you're used to working with professionals all over the world?
Because Julie Beiler will not take no for an answer.
Well, that's the easy answer, but I mean, but you could refuse to take her call.
I think anyone who is involved in the making of music, it's like breathing. To me, this is not work. This is one of the great joys of life, and it's quite renewing for me and inspiring to get away to perform great music with great people who are there totally for the love and joy of making music. It's not a job. My heart and soul is with the amateur volunteer choirs, and it's also a season of giving back for me. So I'm not able to accept as many as I have in the past, but when I can, I thoroughly enjoy doing it. And the chorale has become like family to Renee and me. We have many dear friends, and I was honored, and Julie has been very accommodating to find a time that would work in my schedule. So I feel like in some ways I'm coming home.
One of the things that will happen, of course, as you know, is you'll be conducting some things, but you'll also be sitting there listening to, let's see, Chris, are you 19?
18.
18. 18-year-old Chris Holman play the pipe organ. What are you going to play, Chris?
I'm going to play the finale to the Second Symphony of Charles-Marie Vidor.
Vidor, mm-hmm. V-I-D-O-R. Mm-hmm. And how did you pick that musical selection?
It's a very big piece, not so lengthy, but it's very very dense. And
could we say splashy?
Yeah, sure. yeah, it's a very fun piece, and it's a big finale to a symphony.
Uh-huh,
you know,
right? And what about that instrument you'll be playing?
The McKinley organ is one of the finest in Champaign, built by Lynn Dobson
of Iowa.
Of Iowa, yes, and certainly is very well suited to the music. So it will be a real treat for me to play the organ, and we hope for the listeners to listen.
In comparison to some of other Lynn Dobson instruments, it's quite modest. Mm-hmm. But has a lovely sound. I was also able to hear a pipe organ he designed in the Philadelphia Symphony Orchestra Hall, mm-hmm. the new one, and it is just amazing. I don't know if you've had a chance to ever see that yet, but what a pipe organ. Mm-hmm. Craig, you've played around the world and in many, many venues that had great instruments. Share with us a few memories.
Oh, as far as organs, of course, I grew up in hearing the sound of one of the greatest organs in the world and certainly one of the most famous, and that's the Tabernacle organ in Salt Lake City, that grand Aeolian Skinner organ of Harrison is... considered the signature organ of the American classic organ, and that sound is just inescapable in my mind. Other great organs around the world, I served as a missionary in England as a young man when I was 19, and I must say I'm quite smitten with the Anglican tradition and organ and the choirs, so the organ at King's College, Cambridge. Again, one of the most famous organs of the world and very reminiscent in both the acoustic and the sound of the organ of the Tabernacle organ, the Greg organ in Westminster Abbey, St. Paul's Cathedral. And I've had a chance to perform with all of those organs for various things in my career.
One of the joys of travel is to be able to hear those kind of instruments in those kinds of places. I remember first hearing choral singing in Cambridge and Oxford and that English tradition. John Rutter is one of the composers and the conductors of the Cambridge choral music. We're doing what pieces of Rutter in this concert?
Well, excuse me, we're actually doing three. We're singing his Distant Land and Canticles and Lord Make Me an Instrument.
Okay. And Chris, what other pipe organs of note have you played in your relatively young life?
I have played the Mormon Tabernacle organ.
Ah.
Bravo, sir.
I thought you might like that, Dr. Jessup.
Bravo.
I have briefly. Actually, I played all of the organs in Temple Square in Salt Lake City.
We have an embarrassment of riches there, don't
yes,
we, with
yes,
organs.
Yeah, it's very impressive. Other things that I've done, I played in the organs at the Eastman School of Music, which is a thriving place right now. They're building new organs right and left, and as well as Oberlin Conservatory.
I wanted to say before Craig leaves that he gave you the reasons that he comes. I really intended to tell you why he's coming for the third time from my perspective, and that is, it is true that I try to elicit a promise even before he leaves town that he'll come again. So here's my opportunity even before he comes to ask again. But truly, he, and don't miss that now, He comes and provides these singers with, you know, when you do something for 28 years, you're always looking for interesting programming and things that will inspire the singers to rise to the occasion and maybe raise the bar some. And every time he's come, we have done that. He has done that. And they do think of him as family. It's embarrassing a little bit how familiar they seem to feel. But and we did spend some time out in Utah at his invitation this past summer with his American Festival Choir in a week of a marathon of singing and sightseeing and concerts, which was just a glorious experience. But he does us such a favor to come.
Let me introduce our guest one more time for listeners who might have joined in and remind folks that Keeping the Faith is almost always a live call-in show, but this one is pre-recorded so we can get all of our guests together on at one time. And so we're not accepting calls tonight. I apologize for that. Same will be true next week, but then we'll be back to our regular schedule starting in on November 21st and I'm sorry, November 14, 21st, and 28th with live call-ins. Abby Harmon will be our guest on November 14, talking about tent communities, the homeless in the Champaign-Urbana area. Later, we'll be hearing about a new Bach cantata, believe it or not, with John Sutherland. And do we have a soloist who's going to be part of this conference?
Oh, thank you. Yes. Elizabeth Campbell Buckley is coming to join us. She sang the Vivaldi Gloria with us in the spring and was kind enough to let me sing with her in the Laudamus Te. But she's coming to sing in the choir. And also, I had asked her if there was something she had in her bag of repertoire that would be appropriate to this concert. So she has suggested that she sing the Pia Jesu from the Durafle Requiem and dedicate this to all who have lost their lives. And once again, we tend to think of only the military, but anyone who in the service of peace has sacrificed for that goal.
And mezzo-soprano Elizabeth Buckley will also be our guest here on Keeping the Faith on the 28th of November, talking about this Bach cantata she's working up. Our other guest is Chris Holman, a freshman at the University of Illinois studying organ performance, and Julie Beiler, director of the chorale that will again be performing Sunday evening, November 7th at 7 p.m. at McKinley Presbyterian Church in Champaign, Illinois. And if you missed part of this program or other Keeping the Faith programs, of course, they are archived at will.illinois.edu/keepingthefaith. And since this time of year is when WILL needs to power down at sunset, that often comes in the middle of Keeping the Faith or even before it starts. But I remind you, you can hear it via your computer very easily at that same web address, will.illinois.edu/AM. And you can hear the program live or archived. And, of course, it's also available on HD3 on FM if that's convenient for listeners. Craig, I know we're getting close to the time you must leave us. Any last words as we think about this concert coming up?
I want to thank Julie and the chorale for inviting me back once again to perform with them. I'm looking forward to it very much. I want to express my thanks to you for inviting me to be on your program. And I want to tell the citizens of Champaign-Urbana how fortunate they are to have the chorale. It's a cultural treasure in your community, and you're most fortunate indeed to have a woman the caliber of the talent of Julie Beiler with not only great musical skills, but great people and humanitarian skills who really invests and gives back to the community. It's a very rich cultural fabric that she weaves and provides for your community, and I'm honored to be a tiny part of that.
We're going to play a little bit of transition music, Craig, while you ring off and we handle some technical things. This is a recording of, what's it called, Julie?
Lord, make me an instrument of thy peace.
With the text from attributed to St. Francis of Assisi, and this is performed by?
None other than the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. Thank you, Craig.
Thank you.
Lord, Make Me an Instrument of Thy Peace, sung by the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. And the conductor of that, was that Craig Jessup?
That was indeed.
From his time as the principal conductor.
When he first came here in 06, he was indeed the conductor of the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. When he came in 08, he was transitioning it to Utah State. And when he comes this time, he will, as you pointed out, have been the newly appointed dean to the Kane School of the Arts.
We're talking today on Keeping the Faith with Julie Byler, whose voice you just heard, director, founding director of the Chorale from Champaign-Urbana, and Chris Holman, who's a freshman at the University of Illinois, both of whom will be performing at McKinley Presbyterian Church, a free concert, Sunday night, November 7 at 7 p.m. Chris, let's talk a little bit about music from a young person's perspective. The other three of us on the air today are a bit older than you. Why classical music? Why people your age are listening to all sorts of things, and you probably do too, but why did you choose this?
It's at least in organ music, it's sort of a dying art, you know, and it's such a, you know, obviously I think so, but, you know, it's such an important thing. I mean, we've had organ music for, you know, thousands of years. It's such a remarkable tradition to be a part of, and, you know, I think it's just, it's so important.
How do you talk about what you do now professionally, really, with your peers? Do they understand the appeal? Will they come and hear you play? Will they show up Sunday night, the 7th?
Yeah, sure. You know, sometimes it takes a little convincing. You know, people are just, you know, they say, oh, the organ, you know, you know, it's just one of these sort of things. But, you know, the organ can do, you know, there are things on the organ that are just unbelievable. You know, if you have an instrument that's large enough to have the, you know, there's a huge tonal spectrum of all sorts of colors and really exciting things that it can do.
And how does it compare to a keyboard on a stage with a rock band coming through speakers? Because after all, they have all kinds of things that are possible, all kinds of sounds that are possible. How does it compare to that?
Well, I think the biggest difference is, you know, the pipe organ generates its own sound. It doesn't need speakers, you know, and you can really tell the difference. You know, there's just something, you know, it's like hearing a live symphony or a recording of a symphony, you know. Which would you rather hear, you know?
When you talk to people your age at the university about being a music major, do they think, you're going to starve? I'm going to be an engineer. Yeah. You're only a music major.
Actually, that's a pretty common thing. In organ, it's excuse me, in organ music, it's a little different because, you know, you've got a lot of permanent employment at churches, you know, and you don't really find that so much in other instruments.
But churches are also changing and doing services where no pipe organ is allowed, where it's only guitars and drums and things.
That's true. But, you know, there's still a great number of churches out there that are really excited about the organ and continue to keep that really grand tradition.
We were just having this discussion the other day. Excuse me for interjecting here, but somebody said to me, do you think the organ is ever going to come back into worship? Because, as you pointed out, the direction of worship is going in other directions. And I think, from a personal standpoint, that initiation has to come from the education, the higher institutes of education, where programs are strong, where people like Chris can go into a church and say, this is really important, as he's doing at St. Peter's, as I understand it. He's in the process, aren't you, Chris, of trying to get in a pipe organ where
yes.
they have currently an electronic organ.
St. Peter's United Church of Christ in Champaign, yes.
So it really, I think it has to be generated from an educational point of view. And I personally have hopes that the cycle will come round and we'll return to some of that glorious pipe organ music.
I remember in my college days reading C.S. Lewis's very negative remarks about hymns and music in the Anglican Church he was familiar with in the 1940s and 50s when he was writing. And he said, he says, I go to Mass, I go to church, but in spite of the music, because he said it's third-rate poetry set to second-rate music.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've had a liturgical renewal since then, you know,
yes.
and there's been some wonderful poetry written set to very fine music that's in current hymnals of many different Christian denominations. Do you find that the let me say, from my background as a Christian pastor and theologian, I find the words often better than my sermons. I mean, they're really carefully thought through. They're really
yes.
well-expressed poetry. Do you find the music of good quality in hymns now, or better than?
Yes. You know, it's just like anything else. There are cycles, you know, where things are really good and things are really bad. You know, but almost always, you know, we're always on an upward, you know, now we're really getting a lot better than, you know, we were 50 or 100 years ago.
Julie has written me a note about Albert Schweitzer. What's that?
Well, you should ask. Speaking of hymns, I think you should ask Chris about his most recent award that he received.
Tell us about the Albert Schweitzer National Organ Competition.
Yes. The Albert Schweitzer is a festival that is held in Connecticut, in Wethersfield, Connecticut, which is outside of Hartford. And to enter this competition, you send in a recording, and they invite three of the top players to come out to Wethersfield, and you play some repertoire, and they choose a winner, and they chose me as the winner.
When did that happen?
That happened, my goodness.
September,
yes.
Last
mm-hmm.
month. Congratulations.
Well, thank you.
And for listeners who may not know, Albert Schweitzer, the great biblical scholar and missionary doctor, was also an accomplished organist, wrote about Bach,
mm-hmm.
And you could probably tell me a lot more.
Everything you said. I mean,
speak about the hymn playing. There was an additional competition.
Oh, there was.
Yes, there was one of the things that they asked us to do was to play hymns, and there was a separate award for the hymn playing, and you had to play just two hymns: "A Mighty Fortress" and "I Love Thy Kingdom, O Lord." And I won that competition as well.
And that involved, remind me, that involved a creative introduction?
Yes, a creative introduction, which in my case, I wrote a little fugue for each. And then you have to play the verses and you have to modulate, go up a key.
For the last verse?
Yes, for the last verse.
And did you do an alternative arrangement of the last verse?
Yes, I did.
Impromptu, or did you get to work on that in advance? You know what hymn it's going to be?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, that helps.
Yes, it does.
It helps the congregations, too. That's what inspires hymn singing, is when you hear a good supportive organ that's doing something creative.
Really makes a difference.
Exciting.
Well, we are out of time, and let me thank our listeners for not calling in this time, and our guests for here in the studio, Julie Beiler and Chris Holman. Chris, a freshman at the University of Illinois studying organ performance as well as choral conducting. Julie Beiler, a local music treasure, as Craig Jessup kindly referred to her, director and founding director of The Chorale, which is performing a free concert November 7, Sunday night, a week from tonight, right after this program almost, at McKinley Presbyterian Church, which is on the corner of 5th Street and John in Champaign. There's free parking on the street. There are parking meters, but they're free on Sunday night, as well as parking in two university parking decks nearby, one on 5th Street and one a block east on John. If you have questions about that venue, do call McKinley Presbyterian Church. Let me tell listeners who what will be coming up here on Keeping the Faith. Next week on the 7th, a recorded program with Dr. Glenn Miller about his new book, How Patience Can Lower Healthcare Costs. It's a very practical program. I encourage you to listen. And then later on the 14th of November, Abby Harmon will be talking about tent communities for the homeless. She's a graduate student here at the University of Illinois. I'm Steve Shoemaker, usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. Thank you for listening.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.